When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In Chicago, two comedian skeptics named Andy and Art were mysteriously abducted by the illusionary mastermind and conspiracy theorist known only as Mr. Bunker. The following serves as a record of Bunker's attempt to convince non-believers of the truth about conspiracies and paranormal activity. Andy and Art give an uninterrupted presentation and verdict on the plausibility of these offbeat topics, delivering what they call the whole enchilada. Will Mr. Bunker convince these two skeptics any of this is real? Will it convince you?
Welcome to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. I am your co-host, Andy Hart, and with me, as always, is your co-host, Art Stone.
Ooh, sorry, Andy, I was giving you a show there. My shorts were hiked up a little bit.
I know.
Don't want to get you too riled up.
Well, I am a little excited, and you know, it's a good thing that I am, Art.
Really?
Because, yeah, that sort of leads me into my first question.
Oh, okay. You're 4.5 chub.
Yeah, I am, and it's getting bigger by the second. Art, what's your favorite sexual fetish?
What the fuck are these questions?
What's your favorite sexual fetish?
I think you gotta go with diaper porn.
Diaper porn. Well, I wasn't expecting that. Have you ever thought about group sex?
No, I haven't.
How about Skyline? Do you like Skyline?
I like the chili.
Wow, okay. So you're saying you're into three ways.
Sure.
Wow. Then I've got great news for you, because today it's not just you and me, but I've invited a partner to join us.
You invited a partner to join us.
Right, yeah.
From Menage en Trois of podcast.
Yeah, a Menage en Trois is what I invited someone for. So, beefers out there, everybody please join me in welcoming a fellow OG beefer.
That's true, actually.
And fellow podcaster.
We have the emails to prove it.
We have the emails. Yeah. There's traffic on this. It's documented. Everyone, please help me give a big, wonderful...
Everyone in this room.
Give a big, wonderful Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time welcome to Jay from Project Skeptic Podcast.
Jay, hi, say Jay. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's going on?
Hey, Jay, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, of course. This has your appearance here has been sort of a long time in the making, because we first got introduced to you when you were just a bunk funker listening to this podcast.
For some reason.
Yeah. You have a twisted mind and a warped
sense
of humor.
You've made bad decisions.
You've spent precious time you'll never get back listening to this podcast. But now you have your own podcast, Project Skeptic Podcast. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, a little fun fact here is I looked it up today. It was episode 16, Boetius Void, was my first episode of Mr. Bunker.
That's how you got introduced?
Yep.
Wow. How did you figure that out?
I don't remember.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Wow, so you have been with us for a really long time. Why don't you tell our bunk funkers, because I think that if they like this show, they'll probably like Project Skeptic. Can you tell us about Project Skeptic?
Yeah, it's a labor of love, I guess. Mm-hmm. I got into it almost a year ago now. And it's just something I was always interested in, like the occult and strange and cryptids and ghosts and stuff like that. But also a lot of stuff around my state. So I was like, well, we've got to do some with my state and also do like big topics. So we cover all kinds of stuff. We just got off of a 3-part series with Ruby Ridge, Waco, and the Oklahoma City bombing.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's a laugh a minute.
Yeah. Hilarity ensued.
Jay, I want to backtrack too. You said your state. I think that's your kind of like, that's your big draw, the thing you're like passionate about. I think you've even suggested a couple of episodes to us that have to do with your state and how much experience and knowledge you have just on your state. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys kind of do like a main ep, but then you do like a more specialized ep just on Pennsylvania.
Yeah, with just me, I do a midweek where I dive into something strange, legend, lore from around the state. And honestly, I don't think I'll ever run out of material because this state just is so old and it has so much crazy stuff that's happened in the last 400 years.
Yeah, Pennsylvania is really chock full of a lot of everything from paranormal to cryptids to extraterrestrial encounters. There's a ton of stuff in this genre that happens in Pennsylvania. Jay, is there a particular story or a legend or a cryptid that you're personally is like at the top of your list from Pennsylvania?
Like people go Pennsylvania, they go, what? The Amish? What? The where our country was founded?
My favorite cryptid, the Amish.
They go, what? Football? Like, and you go, no. Let me tell you my favorite story from my state.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. There's, like I said, well, one of the big cryptids, we have a cryptid local to the state is the Squonk.
Oh,
I'm so happy you said the Squonk.
We love the Squonk.
Yeah, the Squonk is one of the best.
That's pretty, you know, just Pennsylvania. But we also do have, you know, Bigfoot sightings, and we have a bunch of Dogman sightings, which is really, really interesting too. But there is one legend out of the northern part of the state that I don't know if a lot of people that don't live in the state don't know about it. But there's a legend about General Mad Anthony Wayne. Mm-hmm. So he was in the Civil War, and he was a general, and he ends up dying in Erie, Pennsylvania. But his family is from actually over towards Philadelphia. So his son goes to retrieve his body like 3 years later, and it's in perfect condition whenever he gets his body. So they forget what the name of the word is, but they kind of boil him down just to bones so they can bring him back.
But his body stayed in perfect condition for 3 years.
Yeah, if you ever been to Erie, it's kind of cold all the time. So it was like I don't
natural
know if he
preservation.
Preserved.
Wow, that's crazy.
So they get all these bones and they put them in this cart and he heads back across the state. And halfway there, he's in a horse carriage accident and he loses some of the bones from Anthony Wayne. So the legend goes that, you know, since he's not fully intact, he roams that road looking for the rest of his bones.
Ooh, that's a fun one.
Wow, that is a fun one. Looking for bones? I like that.
Yeah, ghost looking for his old bones?
I love that. Old Rattle Bones, the ghost, looking for bones. I like it.
The Mad General.
That's right.
That's a great one. But Pennsylvania has tons of these types of stories, right?
Yeah, there's you got to figure Gettysburg. You know, I haven't even touched on Gettysburg on my own show yet because I don't know how I'm going to actually get the time to sit down and figure out something to write about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The grounds there around Gettysburg really do. It has like a certain weight to it. It's kind of crazy the amount of just like, you know, pure bloodshed and carnage and horror that was seen all around Pennsylvania, really, but especially Gettysburg, right? So. I think a lot of people remark that when they first visit it, like especially like early in the morning, you know, if it's like foggy or dewy out and it's just like the air is kind of warm and heavy and it's just like, I don't know. It's a very interesting place to visit. I think it was definitely lost on me when I visited it at like age 12, because I was just like, when am I going to leave?
Yeah.
When am I going to get to go like back to the hotel room and play video games with my friends?
Yeah, when I went on my Gettysburg was a stop when I was in middle school on doing our Washington D.C. trip.
Right.
And so we were on the buses driving out to Washington, D.C. We stop at Gettysburg, do a tour of the battlefield. And then there was some sort of like special buffet dinner that they had that night at Gettysburg. I don't remember the place, But that was like the thing I was excited about. I was like, yeah, these Confederate monuments, these dead Confederate soldiers are cool and all. But hey, when's that buffet coming?
Where's the cornbread, Teach?
Yummy, yummy.
Jay, so your show is called the Project Skeptic Podcast, obviously. Yep. Well, and where might the fine bunk funkers find such a fine podcast?
Anywhere they can find this fine podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. So in the deleted folder on their device that you've listened to podcasts? Yeah.
Now we're pretty much everywhere. Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music. Gotcha. We have a Facebook page. You can find us, Project Skeptic on Facebook.
Nice.
Instagram, Project Skeptic Podcast on Instagram. Just all the usual.
Do the Google. So Project Skeptic. So obviously the question we like to ask a lot of guests, where do you kind of lean when you approach weird, bizarre topics, especially ones along the realm of like paranormal or conspiracy or whatever, aliens, what have you? Are you generally more of a skeptic, as the namesake of your podcast would kind of showcase, or are you more of a believer? Which way do you think you usually lean with a topic?
See, I'm usually the theme of our show is kind of like, I want to convince other people that are skeptics that most of this is true.
Wow. Okay. I like it.
So I'm more of a firm believer in stuff. A lot of times when I do research, I'll dig into something and I'm like, well, I don't believe as much of it as I did before. But gotcha. I also, whenever I have my co-hosts up here, I want to present a story as it is known to be, whether it's a conspiracy or ghost story or something like that, how it is in the zeitgeist of, nice. The internet.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, Jay, I've always thought of you as like a believer who's also willing to consider the skeptical side of it. Like you're not a believer to the point of saying this is absolutely always true. I won't consider anything else.
Now, I always just consider aliens as the factor that isn't there.
Right. So, right. Yeah.
If you can't figure it out, it's aliens.
Yeah. It's always aliens for sure.
That's very true.
So you've been doing Project Skeptic for about a year. What would you say is maybe like your favorite episode or favorite topic you've covered? What have you learned anything really surprising doing the show?
It's the one thing I did find surprising about doing the show is actually me like selling myself, like putting myself out there. You know what I
wow.
mean? Cause you have to be this, what you have to be the show, and you have to put yourself out there, and you have to make, get a following and get people to, like your show and listen to you, which is, I struggle with that, I guess, not being as extroverted as many people might think I am. But I that's one thing that I learned about having the show. Probably my favorite episode. We did a big long stint one night on the JFK assassination.
Whoa. Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big one.
Yeah. So there was actually four of us in the studio. I mean, the episode went almost 2 hours and it was a good episode.
Yeah.
That's a big one, man. I mean, it's one that's stood the test of time. It's all of our parents' first major conspiracy, and it's maybe the moon landing is, but that would have been before the moon landing, but still they're all in the same time. So who gives a fuck anyway? Yeah.
That kind of leans me towards the whole more people starting to believe in conspiracies. That is like the jump off point for all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's sort of like the beginning, like JFK's assassination sort of kicks off the age of conspiracy in a way. But Jay, you're more of a believer. Have you ever had any, we like to ask this of a lot of our guests, have you ever had any experiences yourself, either with the paranormal or maybe something like extraterrestrial?
Yes, I have.
Wow.
We used to live on the highest skiable mountain in Pennsylvania. It's a ski resort. It's called Blue Knob. So
that's what I call my penis.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I have poor blood flow.
I knew it was going to go there.
I have poor blood flow.
Yeah.
I almost called it something else. But we lived up there for about 7 years when me and my wife first got married. And I had worked late 12-hour shift till like 2 o'clock in the morning. But where we lived right across from a monument to two children that were lost in the 1600s in a snowstorm. And they there was this whole big thing about this guy having a dream that actually showed where the kids were. He was bedridden and he had this dream saying there's a shoe, there's a dead deer, there's a birch tree across the creek. And that's how they found these two children lost in the woods.
Oh, they found them.
They found them. They followed this guy's dream. Wow. And they found the kids.
This guy's like an Edgar Casey.
Back to 2008, I was on my way home. It was late, mid-February, snowstorm, driving across the top of the mountain. There's a big opening with some cornfields on either side. No corn in February, but cornfields. And I come down into this dip to go out to this straightaway where there's a church and a cemetery. And about halfway through the roadway out to the other side, there's two all black children, like black hooded clothes, everything, walking with their heads down at 2:30 in the morning.
Whoa. Ooh,
creepy.
Were these delinquent teens?
What were those goths doing out so late?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't slow down. They had their heads down the whole time. They didn't look up to see if there was a car coming. They were there. Yeah. I went past them and I didn't look back, but they were children of the age of the two Cox boys that got lost in the woods.
Wow.
Wow.
So
two Cox lost on Blue Knob.
Yeah.
Jay, how close were you to these children?
They were on my side of the road as I passed them coming. They were walking towards me like,
ooh, creepy.
That is very creepy.
Yeah. Sometimes I do wonder if, you know, it seems like you travel through, or you have, at least in the past here, some pretty rural areas. You know, we don't really have many mountains over here in Chicagoland. So, you know, and we are kind of attached to this big city. I wonder sometimes how much that kind of, I feel like maybe having more of that rural connection helps with some of the more of these sightings. You know, it's like you hear about things out in the forest or out in the woods or out in the wherever, but it's like kind of rare that we ever get a guest that's like, you know, yeah, I saw something like down the block in the alley or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
That's just a crackhead.
Yeah, well, probably.
Yeah, that's fair. We did have the Mothman here.
Yeah.
That's true, I guess, right? People were having Mothman sightings in Chicago.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know.
I've tried to debunk the whole sighting for, you know, every time that I think about it or actually go back up there, I try to think, like, who could it have been? You know, I still want to believe that what it was, but I also want, like, if there's a reason why these two kids were out walking, like, even my dad said, why didn't you stop? I said, why would I have stopped?
Yeah. I mean, I would not have stopped. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that comes up a lot in these types of stories. People say, well, why wouldn't that person have stopped? Or, you know, strange that they didn't stop. It's like, I try to not get involved in anybody else's business.
Yeah, God knows we're conflict
averse. If nobody's asking me for anything, I'm going to ignore them. If these kids are just walking, it's like, why stop? They know what they're doing. I don't blame you at all, Jay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. You know, I think that's a pretty creepy experience.
Yeah.
And certainly you've got a lot of opportunity to see creepy stuff in Pennsylvania. I mean, just go practically anywhere.
It's everywhere.
People from Pittsburgh. I mean,
ew.
Holy moly.
Of course, Andy's got to take a dig at the Steeler fans.
Yeah.
Boy. But hey, we're having a good time here.
We're having a great time here.
What do you say, Jay, we're glad to have you on board. What do you say we get into today's topic, which is about a Pennsylvania haunting / demonic possession story? So this is going to be great for all you beefers who like ghosts, all you beefers who like demons, mm-hmm. all you beefers who love the Catholic Church.
Wow.
And all you beefers who like skeptics.
Oh my goodness.
This is going to cover a lot of bases.
Yeah, look at us.
So Jay, we're talking today about the Smurl family haunting. Now, are you familiar with this?
Yes, pretty much. Heard it a bunch of times. Did some research and yes, I'm pretty familiar with it.
Okay, perfect. So Jay is going to correct everything I get wrong.
Yep.
In this episode, and he's going to set the record straight. but what do you say? Let's get into it, huh? Let's dive into the Smurl family haunting here on Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast.
It's me, Smurl. Bilbo.
Smurl. No, beavers, I hope you're all prepared for today's episode because we're talking about a ghost story.
Ghost.
Zoinks! Even scarier, this story takes place in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania. Knowing all this, there's only one thing we could do. Call in a resident Pennsylvanian and fellow podcaster to help keep us calm. That's why we're joined today by Jay from Project Skeptic Podcast. Jay is an OG beefer as well, so he knows it's pointless to try to keep me and Art from making comically large sandwiches, jumping into each other's arms, and eating dog food. Because we can't be stopped. We'll just keep doing it.
We're going to keep doing that no matter what.
No matter what. So let's just jump right in here. And let's talk about today's story, which is the haunting of the Smurl family.
Okay, Smurl is definitely not the like first name that Tolkien was considering for Smeagol, right? This isn't like a small hobbit that has been corrupted by the Ring of Power, Smurl.
Yeah, Smurl was Smeagol's cousin.
Yeah.
Smurl was like,
my desirables.
Yes.
He's like way more mild mannered than Smeagol. He's like,
I could take it or leave it.
Yeah, either way, I don't necessarily need it, but I'd like it.
I'll eat the fish, but I wish it was cooked. I am aware of what potatoes are. So that's Smurl.
That's a Smurl character.
So here's the story. In August of 1973, while Richard Nixon, Art's favorite president of all time,
not a crook,
was still in office.
That was a bit in our text chain.
That's Art's favorite president of all time, Richard Nixon. This is in August of 1973. Richard Nixon, still in office, has not resigned yet. In August of 1973, Jack and Janet Smurl moved their family into a duplex on Chase Street in West Pittston, Pennsylvania. Their old home in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, was flooded out in the devastation left by Hurricane Agnes.
Wilkes-Barre?
It's Bear?
I got to correct the Pennsylvanian
good,
talk.
Good, thank it. You. Please jump in, Jay.
Please, anytime.
Hey, you were saying about the hurricane.
Yeah.
So I did look at this as Agnes was the costliest hurricane in the United States history at this
really?
Point. Yeah, it was
at this point.
$2.1 billion in damages.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this thing kind of went up the East Coast and sort of, it looks like it pretty much settled into Pennsylvania from
that's
what I was
wild.
Looking
at. I didn't even know Pennsylvania could be affected by hurricanes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you got to keep in mind that Wilkes-Barre, West Pittston, these are like on the eastern side of the state.
Gotcha.
Northeastern.
You know what I think is funny, too, is if you watch anything about this, all the ones that I watched, they were showing pictures of Pittsburgh.
Oh, is that really?
I was like, that's not even the same side of the state.
Yeah, completely the wrong side. So they moved because of the hurricane. Their old house got flooded out. They moved to this duplex in West Pittston. The Smurls were a seemingly normal family. There was Jack, the dad, Janet, his wife, their two children, Dawn and Heather. They were also living with Jack's parents, John and Mary, who moved into the duplex with them. And Jack described their family as "quote unquote" pillars of the community.
Yes, they were. They were involved in all kinds of stuff in the community, didn't they? She was like organized some kind of students against drunk drivers, and he was a part of the Lions Club and the softball team and all that stuff. They were, you know, they were normal in the community type of family.
Oh yeah, I got a whole list here, Jay. Listen to this. So the whole family's involved in the Catholic Church, the local church there. They get involved.
Peace be with you.
As you do.
Jack, Jack worked for the Topps bubblegum factory and got a promotion not long after they moved in. Janet got pregnant with twins. And hey, I mean, they're living in this house with all these people. Just think about how many people probably heard them fucking when she got pregnant in this house. Dawn and Heather, the girls, they're doing great in school, despite the repeated disturbances by their parents loudly fucking and coming. As Jay said, Jack was helping coach the girls' softball teams as they got older. Janet started the Mothers Against Drunk Driving chapter at the local high school.
Mad.
Jack and Janet both were involved in the Lions Club. And hey, don't forget the end result of Jack and Janet bumping ugly so regularly and loudly that the whole town could hear was those twins who were born and became family members, Shannon and Karen.
Aw.
So this family,
I think that's a very old name too. I don't think anybody names anybody Karen anymore.
No, not anymore.
And I'll just point out that Karen in this case is C-A-R-I-N.
Oh, okay. So, not with a K.
Yeah. Not with a K.
Okay.
So think about that, Art. So, I mean, obviously, like Jay said, nothing really appeared amiss for the Smurls, but things, insert record scratch sound effect, were about to change. Now, Beefers, quick note on the timeline here. The events that I'm about to describe happened over a period of years. More than a decade, the Smurls lived in this house and experienced things, okay? And the same is true for the events that we just mentioned, like all of the good things that were happening to them. This all happened over a period of multiple years.
So. Okay, so that wasn't just like one big bang between the two parents fucking, and then all of a sudden, boom, all these
right,
things.
Everything happened all at once. No, this is all spread out over a period of years.
Gotcha.
So just keep that in mind while you're listening, that as things progress, the Smurl children are also getting older. So it's not just like four little babies the whole time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the duplex in West Pittston was a bit of a fixer-upper, so the family went to work when they moved in, fixing it upper. So that's when they started noticing some strange things happening. First, things were kind of mundane, right? Tools went missing and then would reappear later, or stains on the wall were seeping through fresh coats of paint. They paint over something, and whatever they painted over, it reappears. There were also some other things that happened, like kitchen appliances and a TV caught on fire. There was music playing from a radio, even when these appliances were unplugged. There was an awful stench that was all over the house. It would pop up and just dissipate a little bit later.
It's a lot like visiting your place.
Well, hold on. I'm going to make that joke in a minute.
Oh,
and it's going to be important. It's going to come back. So, okay.
These are 1970s appliances too, right? They're not any newfangled appliances. So maybe maybe they had some issues.
Yeah,
maybe.
And we will discuss that too. They seem to think that in the house. So, other things were happening, like pipes began leaking. Dear God. Toilets began flushing themselves, and electrical items were failing. So here's the joke that I wrote down. Maybe I lived with the Smurls briefly. I don't remember it, but starting fires, flushing toilets, disabling electronic devices, and making unbearable smells are kind of my hallmarks.
Yeah, that's true.
So Beefers, let us know who made the joke better, me or Art.
Wow.
So at first, the Smurls didn't really get concerned about these unusual events, right? It was easy to kind of write these off. They thought maybe there were plumbing or wiring issues with the house. In fact, they claimed to have the whole house rewired three times while they lived there.
My God.
It's a lot. You throw in all the replacement appliances, and this duplex was starting to seem a little bit like a money pit. Adding to the family stress, Jack's mother, Mary, also had a heart attack. So things eventually on the paranormal front got even scarier, though, according to the family. Things really started to ramp up the night their oldest daughter had her confirmation to the Catholic Church. So this
big
would have
deal.
Been, yeah, Dawn's confirmation, and things started to ramp up. So here's some of the stuff they started to experience. They started to hear knocking on the doors or walls, sometimes in a pattern of three, which some people consider to be evil spirits mocking the Holy Trinity, like, you know, God, Jesus, and the Holy Ghost. I'm not talking about onion, celery, and bell pepper here. Janet and Mary thought that they heard each other's voices, even though neither was speaking. Mary even had an experience where she thought she heard Jack and Janet having an extremely loud profane argument.
Oh, I thought you were going to say sex session.
No, everybody knew they were fucking very loudly. Everybody knew that was happening, but that was not a mystery. But Janet or Mary thought she heard Jack and Janet swearing at each other in a very loud argument, and Jack wasn't even at home at the time.
Maybe I live with the Smurls.
Maybe so. They saw drawers in the house opening and closing themselves, slamming shut as if aggressively done so. Rocking chairs moved on their own. The smells got worse and started to make the family sick. They also started seeing what looked like claw marks in the bathroom. They described like the bathtub in the bathroom looked like it had like a raccoon in it or something. There were so many claw marks all over it.
Was it green or pink? Because it's the 70s, right? So the bathrooms had to be.
That's actually a really funny question, Jay. And I'm pretty sure the answer is actually pink, if I'm remembering right. The so photographs true. From the house are not like particularly great quality that I saw.
Yeah.
But I do. And it might have just been in the movie about it. But I don't know. I think it was pink.
Called Justin Link.
So anyway, a light fixture fell from the ceiling and it broke apart, cutting one of the children. The Smurl family dog, Simon, not Nick Simon, heyo, was repeatedly slammed into walls. And even human members of the family experienced being grabbed by an entity, lifted, or thrown around. One of the children was thrown down the stairs in the house. Janet was levitated 6 feet above her bed one night and slammed into the wall. And Jack reported being dragged out of the bed while trying to pray the rosary. Now, before long, ghostly figures started to appear around the house, including above family members while they slept. In 1985, a ghoul that the family named Old Hag began appearing and walking through the walls in the house. Multiple family members claimed Old Hag and or some other demon, a succubus, sexually assaulted them, including both Jack and Janet.
Jesus Christ.
And Jack and Janet being sexually assaulted by this entity is shown in the made-for-TV movie about the incident, and the scene where the succubus rapes Jack is by a wide margin the most incredible scene in the movie and possibly one of the most incredible scenes in all of cinema.
Now, why do you say that? I haven't seen it.
So here's the story. Jack is watching a baseball game on TV.
As you do.
Janet goes upstairs to read the kids a bedtime story.
Mm-hmm.
Jack heads to the kitchen. He pops open a can of beer. He's sitting in his recliner drinking this beer. Then you can see the way the scene is shot. It starts at the top of the stairs. The camera's at the top of the stairs.
Uh-huh.
And it's descending the stairs slowly. And Jack comes into frame. And just when he's like into the center of the frame, you can see what appears to be a woman's arm touch the railing of the stairs. So naturally, you just sort of assume this is Janet coming downstairs.
Yeah.
Well, then you can only see this woman from the back. It's got hair that's sort of like Janet. She's wearing a nightgown. You think, oh boy, Janet.
Time to make another baby.
Janet is ready to loudly fuck again. she needs another set of twins. But instead, the woman comes down the stairs and approaches Jack. Jack doesn't even like notice it at first. But then the woman like grabs him out of the chair and tosses him across the room. And he falls on the floor on his back. And then the woman jumps on top of him, and it's clearly not Janet. And this woman has like sharp, pointy teeth, and she's got this malevolent smile. And he's like, "What are you doing to me? Let me go. Let me go." and this was a made for TV movie. She lifts up the nightgown a little bit and is like adjusting her hand in there, clearly inserting his penis.
Yeah.
And
is that how it's done?
Yeah, that's how it's done. And so she's doing this, and then, you know, he's like, "Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing?" And then let me go. And then she just starts like humping him. And as she's humping him, the lighting changes. There's like, it becomes red in the room and there's like fog.
Exactly. You watched this on what website?
Yeah. This was on Ghost Hub. And
only ghosts.
So while she's humping, she's like looking very crazy. And then her appearance keeps changing. It's from this frail little woman to what looks like a large man in a blonde wig.
Okay.
And it's like going back and forth between those two. And then it's over.
Yeah.
And she disappears and Jack's like, oh, and he puts his head in his hands and stuff.
In the research story, they say that she had the head of a succubus, but a body of a young lady.
Wow.
So her body was firm, but her head was like a old hag with, you know, ragged teeth. And, yeah. So that begs the question, which way would you rather have? Would you have rather have the good looking head in the old body or the firm young body in the old looking head?
All old. Gilf.
Gilf.
Yeah. Art's into grandmas.
Yep. Grandmas and diapers.
If you're a grandma and you can't control your bladder, hit Art up.
So that, I mean, listen, you know, not making light of that situation. That's a very serious situation. But
there's a name for it.
I'm sure the made for TV movie was very well acted and not somewhat cheesy in any way, right? So
yeah, exactly. It was a very straight ahead performance.
So this is getting pretty serious.
Yeah, things are serious. So the family also, around this time, they reported hearing pig noises and seeing an apparition that looked like a pig.
Okay.
Oh, now I remember. I did live in this house secretly. All right. Case confirmed. This was me.
We figured it out, Jay.
That's the end of the episode.
Yep. Case confirmed.
Now here's... Yeah. No question. This was definitely me haunting the Smurls. Now here's another interesting point, though. The paranormal activity wasn't necessarily just contained to this house on Chase Street in West Pittston. The Smurls' next door neighbors, the Watson family, said they experienced scratching noises at their windows, rooms suddenly becoming ice cold, and other unexplained happenings. Then one night, the Watsons heard what they described as, quote, piercing and ragged, end quote, screaming, and noises that sounded like, quote, some gigantic bird trapped in the house and trying desperately to get out, end quote.
Now you have my attention.
Giant birds.
So this, yeah, giant birds. This, and Art is pissed.
I am pissed off.
He's going to burn this house to the ground. So the Smurls even reported the demonic forces following them around when they left the duplex. Jeez. For example, when the family went on a camping trip, Janet said they heard banging noises on the top of the car and the camper started to shake. So they're having all these strange things happen. Obviously, at some point they started to say, we need to figure this out. We need to like get to the bottom of what's going on here. So there was some investigation into the happenings in 1986. The Smurls answered the question, who you gonna call, by bringing in the famed paranormal husband and wife investigative team, Ed and Lorraine Warren. The Warrens were legends in the haunting and demonic possession space. Ed was a self-taught demonologist, and Lorraine was a medium, and together they tackled some of the most famous hauntings, like the Amityville haunting.
Wow.
Yeah, the one from the famed Amityville horror franchise. More on that in a bit.
Wink!
Ed and Lorraine also founded the New England Society of Psychic Research, and their work also formed the basis for the Conjuring media franchise.
That's right. This is what this is based on. This spawned The Conjuring,
right,
which is a very popular horror franchise.
Well, this is part of it, plus other stuff that the Warrens did.
Other stuff. Okay.
Yeah, so they've been involved in a lot of...
So it's mostly the Warrens.
Yeah, they were active for several decades investigating paranormal activity. And they ended up taking on some of the what became the most famous hauntings that probably are on record.
Yes, yeah, it's the Warren WCU, right? The Warren Collective Universe, where the Conjuring comes from.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is honestly, at this point, Jay, they do have their own like media universe connected to the work of the Warrens, because
that's pretty sick.
Like,
dude.
Amityville spawned so many different movies and books and stuff, and The Conjuring is becoming the same way. You know, the Smurls had a TV movie. They covered another haunting somewhere else. I can't remember, in Connecticut, I think, that ended up as a TV movie. So there's a lot of media.
We need like a show that's like about the Warrens, told really like well done, like X-Files style, but it's like a little bit of Constantine mixed with a little bit of X-Files starring the Warrens. I'm into it. Husband, wife, hit me up. I'll write it. What do you think, Jay? Would you watch a show like that?
Oh yeah, why not? I mean,
there we go. I got Jay as a viewer.
Yeah, we're good.
And also, I'm looking at Art's notes here. It also mentions that Ed's mother lives with them and she's really incontinent and has to wear a diaper all the time.
I don't know why that's falling in place.
All right, all right, all right. Listen, there's a couple of clauses in my work contract that I'm going to need to make sure are signed, okay?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Uh-huh. So Ed and Lorraine Warren do a 6-month-long, highly publicized investigation into the happenings at the Smurl house. And after all this, Ed Warren goes to the press and he tells the press that he gathered evidence of the existence of a, quote, powerful, intangible, invisible force, end quote. The Warrens ultimately determined there were 4 entities in the duplex. A confused old woman, not Jack's mother, hey-o, a young and possibly violent girl, not one of the Smurl children, hey-o, a man who suffered in the home and died there, and finally, a demon which was manipulating the other 3 entities to terrorize the family.
Wow, so there's like a puppet master.
Yeah, this demon is sort of pulling the strings for all of the spirits
are
in this house. But there's a lot of entities.
That's fucking cool.
And I think the woman in the story, or the little girl, which one, I don't know exactly, but I remember that they were thought to be victims of a murder of some sort.
Yeah, there's some suspicion, which we'll kind of get into, that there was a murder at this home where the Smurls lived.
Somebody murdered someone's daughter? George's daughter?
Boy, the audience really loved that one.
Yeah, the audience, the live audience.
Our live studio audience.
Too much tuna.
So, anyway, the Warrens believed that the demon and the other spirits could have been dormant for potentially decades before being reactivated, so to speak, by the turbulent emotional energy of the Smurls' growing daughters, and later even by the adults who were trying to deal with the strange events that were happening. So Art's got a confused look on his face, so let me provide a little context.
Sounds a little creepy. These are creepy uncle kind of demons.
It does have a creepy uncle kind of vibe. And in the movie, Ed Warren says this to the family, and it seems like it's like, okay, that seems a little weird. That
Ed's, I mean, go figure. They're demons. They're not good guys.
Right, right.
These are bad dudes.
But the point is that I think the point that they're trying to make here, the Warrens, is that the girls were getting into their teenage years, and so, you know, when you're a teenager, you sort of, the pendulum emotionally swings a lot of different directions.
Yeah, you're telling me.
All at once. And so they have kind of a turbulent emotional energy. And because of all the stress the family's under, and then these things are still happening, they're getting more and more stressed. The Warrens sort of put it out there that, like, that's what's leading to this heightening, is that the demon is feeding off of this turbulent energy, and the demon is forcing these other spirits to do things.
Wow.
So Ed also made the claim that he had audio and videotapes of the events that occurred in the house, which he said he provided to the local Catholic diocese for investigation.
They love investigating stuff. They're so good at it.
The church is so good at investigating stuff, and they definitely did not push this under the rug and move the demon to another parish. They definitely didn't move the demon to another house and let it keep doing what it was
to
doing.
The underage kids? All right. Well, we'll just find him a different house.
All right. We have a protocol for this. So Ed said he turned over this evidence, the audio video evidence, to the Catholic Church. But to get to an exorcism, the Warrens even commissioned Father Robert McKenna of Our Lady of the Rosary Chapel in Monroe, Connecticut, to perform what ended up being 3 exorcisms.
Holy shit.
So yeah. Just for a little context here too, Our Lady of the Rosary is a relatively recent congregation, only founded in 1973. The church, like McKenna himself, rejected the reforms of Vatican II, which the church's website describes as, quote unquote, disastrous.
Oh my God. So they're in Latin and stuff?
Yeah. So they're like, this is like a very old school, the website brags very much about traditional Catholic mass. Yeah.
I always thought that regular Catholic Mass wasn't long enough. It needed to be longer. You needed to go for more hours, and I needed to not understand any of it.
Yeah, right. More singing, more Latin, you know, more shaking more hands.
Way more shaking hands. I want to shake hands with everybody.
Yeah, you have to. That's how it is. You have to shake hands with everybody in the building.
You know what? I can tell. Peace be with the two of you, for sure.
Yeah. Reese's Pieces.
Yeah, for sure. So initially, the exorcisms McKenna performed didn't work. They only pissed off the demon, making it even more aggressive and violent. So the Warrens, the reason they turned to McKenna is because the Smurls had no luck getting the local Scranton diocese, which the Scranton PA diocese was their local diocese. The local diocese wouldn't agree to an exorcism. The Scranton diocese sent several priests to bless the home throughout the ordeal and even asked at one point a priest to move in with the Smurls. After two nights, the priest was recalled because there was no unusual activity observed.
And also the priest kept eating all the mayonnaise and the cold cuts. And he kind of didn't really, you know, they approached him about it. But then he kept, you know, he just being like, well, listen, I'm a guest in your home. You know, I'm an agent of God. You would agent. Probably, you know, you should probably. And then the Smurls were kind of like, Jesus, this is weird.
I would love to contribute to the grocery bill, but I took a vow of poverty.
And I don't really have anything. It's just, yeah, but you didn't have to make a club sandwich, Father.
I would say this is more of a Dagwood.
Well,
I used all the meats.
All them.
Usually a club is only two, biblically speaking.
Jesus Christ. You can't get into a semantic argument with Father Jones or whoever that is.
Yeah, so that's why it didn't work out. But after two nights, the priest got recalled because they didn't observe anything unusual happening in the house. And throughout, the diocese really seemed to steer the Smurls toward marriage and family counseling to help overcome this, rather than trying to get the demon out of the house. So following the media reports, people started to flock to West Pittston to gawk at the home.
Ugh, as you do.
As you do. Press outlets all over the world carried the story.
Really?
Bringing even greater attention to the family. Janet Smurl didn't exactly like the publicity, and she said the demon didn't like it either. He was shy. She didn't say that. I added that. But she said it was making him angry. But neither did the rest of the family. They didn't like the publicity because curious onlookers plagued the home, and someone even threw a brick through the Smurl's window at one point.
Jesus.
Yeah, when they first went, yeah. They didn't go public. Well, they went public with it first. They were anonymous, right? They didn't. Mm-hmm. The first time that they told their story to get it out there, they were like behind a screen and nobody could see who they were. And they changed their names until it got too bad when it went to the press again. And they were like, look, I don't care if they know who we are. Like, we need help. And this is the only way that we can get it out there so people knew about it.
Yeah, they kind of end up in the press as, you know, it seems like from the family perspective, it's more of a act of desperation to get in the press, desperate for help. Although, you know, as you'll see in the skeptic's take, some people kind of question the motives of the Warrens in being so forthright.
Why is your eyebrow twitching so much when you're saying that?
I'm raising my eyebrows at you, Art.
Grifter's gonna grift.
Wink!
Grifter's gonna grift.
Things got so hairy at the house one night that Jack and John even sat on the front porch with guns to keep the crowd at bay.
Wow.
So eventually, the Smurls moved from the West Pittston duplex in mid-1987. That said, they continued to experience supernatural happenings in their new home, which was back in Wilkes-Barre, until May of 1989, when Father McKenna's third and final exorcism seemed to finally stop the activity. So that's the investigation. Here's a little bit of like the aftermath of all of this. So Professor Paul Kurtz of the State University of New York at Buffalo, who was also at the time the chairman of the Committee for Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, or PSYCOP, an organization we've mentioned a plethora of times on
yes.
this podcast. So PSYCOP offered to investigate the Smurl haunting because of the media attention and because of the Warren's involvement. Now, according to Paul Kurtz, who was the chairman of PSYCOP at the time, the Warrens weren't objective, independent, or impartial investigators.
No way.
I know. This is hard to believe. But Kurtz also said that the Smurls' claims were, quote, a hoax, a charade, a ghost story, end quote.
Wow.
Now, Kurtz wrote a report about the PSYCOP investigation called A Haunting in West Pittston, Not a Ghost of a Chance, that ran in the Skeptical Inquirer, home of Joe Nickel, our favorite skeptic.
Yeah.
So interestingly,
can't wait to find out how this demon was actually just a bear with mane.
It's a bear.
If Skeptical Inquiry reports on it, it's always a bear with mane.
Got to be a bear.
So interestingly, though, the Scranton Diocese seemed to agree with Kurtz's characterization of the Warrens, with St. Bonaventure University theology professor Father Alphonsus Trebold, who was working with the diocese to investigate the Smurfs' claims, said the Warrens were not sincere and were prone to sensationalizing. Father Trebold also said he attended one of the Warrens' lectures because Ed and Lorraine, when they got some fame for investigating the paranormal, they did a lot of lectures, traveled around and instructed people about the paranormal and investigating. So Father Trebold said he went to one of their lectures, and when Ed and Lorraine saw him in the crowd, he says they toned down the content in their lecture, whatever that means. That said, Trebold also did believe that something happened to the Smurls. He just didn't go so far as to call it demonic. So, back to the PsyCop investigation. Two teams of investigators went to the Smurl home, but when they got there, the Warrens wouldn't let them in to do any investigating. The Smurl family did finally give one of the teams permission to actually perform an investigation, and PsyCop members interviewed by phone the Smurl family, their neighbors in West Pittston, and reporters who were writing about the events at the home. And so as I teased already, Kurtz believed the hauntings were a hoax. His reasons for believing this included conflicting reports that the team of investigators got from Dawn, the oldest of the Smurl children. Jack's health was also an issue because Jack had brain surgery 3 years before the incidents to relieve water on the brain, which Kurtz believed could have contributed to delusions.
Water on the brain?
Water on the brain. So Jack told...
What is that?
You got water on the brain. What do you want to call it? Like some sort of a abscess or something?
Oh.
Like a pocket of water?
Jeez, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, they got to drain that stuff off.
Yeah, they actually have a procedure now that they keep the stent in so it drains off, but it back in 72, they're obviously going to have to drill into your head and relieve right. the water. But now they have now they have a procedure where it's just like a stent in like your neck where you just like a faucet, you turn it on and it drains.
What the fuck?
I can't believe Art is like stunned by this, Jay.
Even know it was a thing that you could get water lodged in your brain.
Yeah. Well, it's like outside the brain. It's like there's a pocket of water and they have to drain it off.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's really one of the things too, I think it comes with like concussion. Like if you get hit really hard in the head, sometimes it has the same effect. Also, injuries to your spine can cause water on your brain. So yeah, there's some different reasons why that they have to go in. Well, obviously modern medicine's different now than it was in 72 or whatever.
Yeah. And basically what Jack told the newspaper is that he'd had surgery to remove water from his brain in 1983 because he was experiencing short-term memory loss due to a case of meningitis in his youth, like in his 20s.
Hmm.
So Kurtz believed that the family's claims could have been due to delusions, hallucinations, or Jack's brain impairment, and suggested that the family undergo a psychiatric and psychological exams. The Smurls allegedly declined to take Kurtz's advice. Like they didn't think they needed help. They felt like this was all a demonic thing. So Kurtz was in agreement with an Allentown, Pennsylvania psychologist who reviewed the case named Robert Gordon, who thought that the family possibly suffered from mass hysteria. And he compared the Smurl situation to the Salem witch trials. Gordon said shared tension might have caused this, and common symptoms could involve delusions or hallucinations. Gordon commented that, quote, people often look at demonology to explain many tensions that they experience as individuals and within their families, end quote. So, in other words, he's saying this is an internal problem with the family that they've instead ascribed a demon to those issues.
Yeah, because they said in some of the files that when the twins were born, the activity in the house kind of slowed down. Like maybe they were, you know, they were so busy with the kids and doing that stuff that, to that case in point, that maybe they didn't have these illusions or delusions or whatever at the time.
Right. Very interesting.
Yeah. And in kind of a similar vein of maybe ascribing something to a really natural phenomenon, the smelly smells that were coming from the house.
Ooh, that smell.
Oh, wow.
Wow, Jay with the pipes.
Who is that? Leonard on the other end of the line? Leonard Skinner? So that smelly smell coming from the house could be explained by a cracked sewer pipe near the home. Neighbors in town complained to town officials for multiple years about bad smells coming from a sewer pipe near where the Smurls live.
Shitter's full.
Well, I was living there, so yes, it was. Now, the whole area of West Pittston was built, as far as I understand it, over old, what are now unused mine shafts.
Yes.
And so it's been reported that many homes in the area experienced intermittent settling due to these subterranean shafts being there. So
a lot of the, a lot of the towns around, well, in Pennsylvania, the big coal. They're big coal towns, you know, that's what started a lot of these little settlement towns that grew into actual cities was obviously coal mining. So that explains the mines underneath, and a lot of them weren't mapped at the time. They were just dug.
Wow.
So there's actually a city that's on fire in Pennsylvania. The whole mine shaft's on fire, and it's been since, the early 1900s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of this.
Yeah, Centralia. It's the basis of Silent Hill, actually, too. The video game.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, sorry.
I mean, that's such a thing that sounds like it would happen in, like, the Cleveland area, doesn't it? Like a mine shaft that's on fire for 100 years. Like, that sounds like such a Cleveland thing to me. But it's Pennsylvania. But so West Pittston's built over all these unused mine shafts now, and so it was sort of speculated that maybe some of the things like the rocking chair moving on its own or objects moving when they weren't expected to is due to the house settling because of the shifting ground underneath it. So one thing that Kurtz brought up is that money could also have been a motivating factor for the Smurls, because not long after the story makes national news, I mean, we've kind of teased this all along, a witness allegedly saw Jack Smurl negotiating with a Scranton businessman named Ralph Loma, who was head of the Star Group, which is a production company.
Not Michael Scott.
Not Michael Scott, not head of...
I was wondering how long it'd take to make an office joke.
We made it very far without an office joke.
We were all thinking it.
So he's talking to Ralph Loma, this guy from the Star Group, which is a production company. And Jack initially denied meeting with Ralph Loma, but then Ralph Loma confirmed that he was trying to get exclusive rights to the story about the case. So later that same year, St. Martin's Press announced it signed a book contract with the Smurls. That book would eventually become The Haunted, which was written by Scranton newspaper reporter Robert Curran, Jack and Janet, and Ed and Lorraine Warren, all five. So in 1991, the TV movie, the aforementioned TV movie, The Haunted, which was based on the book The Haunted, debuted. Jack and Janet Smurl and Ed and Lorraine Warren all received writing credits for the movie. So, interesting to note, the movie, The Amityville Horror, was released in 1979. And that was based on the 1977 book, The Amityville Horror. The Warrens love naming the movie the same thing as the book. Both the Amityville Horror movie and book were media and pop culture sensations during the time the Smurl family was living in West Pittston. So, the house in the Amityville Horror story was the scene of a multiple homicide. If you're not familiar with this, the whole family got murdered by one of the kids. And so the paranormal activity that supposedly occurred in Amityville has also since been claimed to be a hoax, even by one of the alleged perpetrators who admitted to it being a hoax. So
yeah,
go ahead,
fun fact here too. The book, The Exorcist, 71.
Yeah.
So the haunting in the Smurl family starts in 72 or 74, something like that. So pretty in the same timeline.
And you know what's interesting too, Jay? Apparently one of the priests in The Exorcist, the actor, was a Scranton native. So when all this stuff came up with the Smurls, when it hit the press, he like came and visited with them.
Oh, wow.
And,
wow. Like,
toured the house, yeah. Because he was kind of a local guy. So this is all very much in the zeitgeist. And I think that it seems to me like a lot of the betting money now on Amityville is that the whole thing was kind of a hoax. So I'm just throwing that out there, but I didn't look much deeper into it than that.
The haunting or the murder?
The haunting, the haunting. I do think that the murder actually happened. So the Smurls made the claim that a psychic told them, getting back to, I forget who mentioned it earlier, but the Smurls claimed a psychic told them that their duplex in West Pittston, much like the Amityville house, had been the scene of a brutal murder. So the blog Hauntingly Pennsylvania did some research on this and found that, in fact, there was a terrible murder in West Pittston.
Oh, no.
But it happened a long time before they moved in, and it wasn't that close to where the Smurls lived. It was several blocks away.
Oh.
But there was a murder in town, a horrible murder.
One.
Town. So one murder, one murder is all they found.
One murder in town.
So, interestingly, Ed Warren seemingly had lots of video and audio evidence that probably refutes a lot of the criticisms I just mentioned, right? Like, that would take care of you of audio and video evidence, which right. Ed said he did. So when he was asked to produce this evidence, Ed said he had given the tapes to a TV company, but he couldn't remember which one.
Hmm.
And of course, as mentioned previously, Ed also said he had turned over this evidence to the Scranton Diocese. The nonprofit organization and blog Decoded Past reached out to the Catholic Diocese of Scranton in like 1998. And the diocese told them that they had no videotape or audio tape evidence from the Warrens in their possession.
Mm.
Wow.
So what's the friggin' deal here, bunk funkers? What was going on in PA, huh? I don't know for sure, but I do know this. Last night, I was sitting at home in my recliner watching the game. You know the one I mean. Anyway, I just popped the top on a frosty beer and was preparing to watch the insert local team name get a big win. Next thing I know, I'm getting lifted out of my seat and thrown across the room as my pants fall around my ankles. Suddenly, as if materializing out of thin air, something appeared above me and began to lower itself on my body. I later learned it was the whole enchilada.
Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast will be right back after this brief message.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
Welcome back. That was my research into the Smurl family haunting. Art and I are still here with Jay from Project Skeptic Podcast.
Hey-o.
Hi, Jay. Jay, you're a PA native. You obviously had the inside info. You've already done some research on the Smurls. You want to give us any kind of blanket thoughts? What are your like overall impressions of this case?
Yeah, so you got to think of it this way. Like there's a lot of these cases and, you know, the way I look at a lot of stuff is like, I'll listen to everybody's story and I won't criticize people on if they had an experience or they got abducted by aliens or whatever. And, I'll listen to people's stories and I don't want to be, you know, opinionated on it, but, some stories just, this one's strange because it's not like they went after money like right away. to be like, we made this whole story up and to go after money right away. But because it went over like, you know, it was like 14 years or something like this, this whole case drags on. Man, I'm not real sure. I mean, maybe sure as we discuss some more of it, we can kind of get there. But I mean, I've listened and looked into this case multiple times, and I maybe come up with a different answer every time for it.
Wow.
Yeah, I can understand that. Because
that's fair.
I do question the timeline too, because I've got like two separate things going on in my mind, right? Like I'm saying, if indeed there were events happening over the whole time that they lived in West Pittston, it's a very long time. And I get it that initially things were more intermittent and it was more minor things. So it's easier to kind of, if you live in that situation, you can kind of explain it away. And then it seems like in the middle part of the 80s is when stuff starts to really ramp up. And the whole story kind of accelerates really fast, in my opinion, from like the mid 80s on, because they're seeing this, you know, supposedly this increase in the demonic, the violent activity that's going on inside the house. They're seeing this increase in media interest in it. They're getting, you know, press for the story. Ed and Lorraine Warren are getting involved. And then it sort of all culminates with this book, this movie. They move away. Everything stops. Nobody who moved into the house, the people that moved into the duplex after the Smurls, have not experienced anything. Like, nobody that's lived there since has reported anything, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
So,
but they also had the experiences after they moved to the new house, which it's really hard to find any information on the new house that they moved to.
Yeah, and the way that the movie sort of portrays this is that they move there and, well, it kind of leaves it open-ended. It's actually a pretty good ending to the movie. It's like, I don't know, it's like a great value version of the end of
Kreidland's signature.
It's like a great value version of the ending of Friday the 13th, which I think is one of the best endings to a movie I've ever seen. So if you don't remember, it's like you go through the whole Friday the 13th thing, right?
Spoilers.
Spoilers. If you haven't seen this like 40-year-old movie now, spoiler alert. But at the end, it's like, I don't know. Watching that movie for the first time, I've only ever seen it once.
It's his mom.
Like, I got the opinion, like, oh, there's not, like, it's just his mom, and she's crazy. Like, there's not really anything. Like, it's not as supernatural. And then, like, at the end, there's, like, this hand that shoots up out of the lake, this perfectly calm, still lake. And I was like, wow, that's a really good ending. Like, that was a powerful shot. And this is almost the same thing, where it's, like, Janet is in the new house, and Jack's, she's like, oh, this house is so perfect, Jack. And he's like, oh, I know. He's like, but not every. He's like, but not everything. We may need to fix up that window over there. And she goes, why? What's wrong with it? And she turns around and look, and then Jack grabs her ass and starts jacking off.
What the fuck?
No, I believe you for a second. Oh, he doesn't start jacking off.
Where the fuck did you watch this movie?
I swear, it was on TV.
Yeah. It was on Skinamax.
The link's in the show notes. I do encourage you to watch it. So he pinches her butt, and then he walks out of the house. They broke.
He does stuff. Pinch her butt.
He does pinch her butt, and she goes, hee hee hee, and then he walks out, and he goes to bring more stuff in. And then she turns, and she's like, ah, and she's like facing the camera, and she like sighs this contented sigh. And then you hear like one of the sound effects that they've been using for the demon through the whole thing. And she like this look of fear like washes over her face, and then the screen goes out. But I think it would be really cool if the camera like got boom, like really tight on her face, like, and then it just goes to black. But
old school 70s.
I guess this is why I don't direct made for TV movies.
That's the main reason.
But so
yeah.
They obviously had something happen at the new house, but then Father McKenna comes back and does an exorcism at the new house, and seemingly everything goes away.
In hauntings that we've covered before, it's tough to know. You know, I'm no demonologist. I did write a note about that. I want to get back.
God damn, what a great fucking title.
It's really easy to get, though. You just go to correspondence school and there you're a demonologist.
Like, really? I'm really tempted to just be able to tell people, like, I am an accredited demonologist.
It probably costs you like $200.
It's worth it for sure.
It's kind of neat. I mean, it's scary, but I think it's only scary because of the whole Catholic upbringing, but at the same time, it is kind of neat. I'm a lore freak. I want to know the lore of these demons. They all have like goofy, crazy names and like different little things that they're into and they do. And they're like, they act in different ways. And it's like, what are you doing here, dude? And he's like, oh, well, I'm not going to tell you my name.
You have to guess my
name.
This
is the funny thing. If Art was a demonologist, people would be like, will you please just help me? He's like, no, I need to find more about the demon. I need more of his backstory. Just stay possessed for a little bit longer, please.
I don't know. I'm into it, but I've always gravitated towards that stuff, especially when it comes to like games or like even as a little kid. You know.
Yeah. I'd like to see how they tie this in, because I've read a couple things that this might be the basis of The Conjuring 4.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. But I had heard that too, Jay. That it's like The Conjuring is just going to keep pumping out movies, I think, and so
yeah.
It seems like the Warren's work is going to be a focal point of that.
But how are they going to tie in, like, Valak is the demon, right, in the Conjuring universe? So I don't understand how, like, they're, I don't know, just tying it in together. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Is Conjuring the one with Vera Farmiga and that handsome dude who's in a lot of rom-coms?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's that the scary, like, priest or nun-looking thing.
Yeah.
Those are too spooky for me. I can't watch those.
And that, the movie about that doll, Annabelle,
mm-hmm.
that's a Warren case too.
But it's actually a Raggedy Ann doll.
Yeah, the doll in the movie is not, doesn't look like the real
Probably
doll.
Probably copyright things, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But I do have some issues with the actual Smurl case. Like with the scratches on like the porcelain, I've looked this up. Like, you know how hard it is to like scratch porcelain?
Well, you're a bathtub aficionado.
Yeah,
Jay.
I mean, yeah. I
love
study,
a good bath. You know. You love taking a bath.
Your favorite song is Tub Thumping.
That's right. You are in the bath right now as we record
yes,
together.
Yes, actually, that's where I am.
And you refuse to turn off your camera.
But so it's very hard to scratch porcelain. You're
saying. Yeah, I mean, it's not the easiest thing to do. I mean, I know it's not like a metal knife or anything like that. You're talking into like diamonds and carbide and stuff like that to actually scratch it. So if the rumors wow. of the actual porcelain being scratched, I mean, that takes it into a different realm, unless they were doing it themselves with something like that.
I guess this demon must be into trading stocks because he's got diamond hands.
Diamond claws.
Yeah.
That's an upgrade.
This demon has claws. So much GameStop stock.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. So that's kind of interesting. So yeah, I wonder what they could have used. Maybe it was cheap porcelain or something. I don't know if that exists.
I mean, you get into some of the things that the goings on in the actual case, like the light fixture on the night of his daughter's confirmation swinging and hitting her. I don't know if you guys ever like had an issue. I mean, even like light fixtures unscrew themselves all the time. Not every day, but you know, you've lived in a house for 15 years. You're probably going to have a light fixture problem.
Shit breaks in houses like constantly. It's unbelievable. And like,
yeah,
people talk about like, oh, whatever, money sink. It's like, yeah, every house you ever buy will always be a money sink.
Yeah,
they're money sinks. you just have to constantly spend money on them.
And it's funny that you bring that up, Jay, because I did see a clip of Ed and Lorraine Warren on like a talk show talking about this, and they were like very adamant that there's no way this light fixture could have come out of the ceiling.
They've got like 20
bolted,
kids.
Big bolts bolted into the, what Lorraine said was the main beam.
Yeah, I don't know about that, kitchen. But you got like what? There's like 40 kids in this house or something. How many fucking kids do they have?
Well, they can't stop fucking. I mean, Jack and Janet for constantly.
Kids ruin houses. They run all up and down them. They break. I broke things when I was looking. Like you just wear a house down over time.
Yeah, there's a theory. Maybe one of the kids broke it and then kind of like put it back together.
There you go.
It fell earlier, but it didn't fall completely off. And the kids were like, oh, shit, we got to fix this.
Been there, done that. I mean, you know, I don't know. Mom and dad are fighting in this scenario.
Fucking.
But didn't they fight, too?
They only fucked.
Oh, okay.
Great website.
The fighting was a fake fight that Mary overheard from her side of the duplex, but didn't actually happen.
So it was, they were hearing the demon trick the neighbors.
Yeah, right, but that, right. that too, I guess he was, they said that Jack wasn't home, but even if she heard it on another night and they she came over, have you guys ever been like, yeah, I was just berating my wife and you came over?
Yeah. Hey, I heard some loud noises. Everything.
Shut the fuck up, Mom. I'm yelling at my wife.
Exactly.
Mom, go back to your side of the duplex. I got to yell loudly at my fucking wife. My stupid ass fucking wife.
Jesus Christ, Jack.
Shut the fuck up, Mom.
Water starts spurting out of his veins. He's getting so angry.
God damn it. One of you kids come out here and turn on my goddamn spigot.
Plug daddy up. No, I get it. I mean, you know, whatever. Married couples fight. And then, yeah, we don't know what the home life was like for these kids in this family. I mean, that's a very private thing, right? And so, who knows? Maybe, or just, you know, in general, kids don't want to get in trouble. I don't have to, like, go to the, you know, nth degree where it's like, oh, the home life was horrible. But it's like, yeah, maybe the kids knocked it loose or the kids were doing stuff. And then they realized, like, shit, I don't want to get in trouble. You know, kids do that all the time.
So what we know is that Dawn, which was the oldest, if I'm not mistaken, gave some conflicting reports to the psychop investigators about what was happening in the house. Hmm. Whereas you have at the other end of the age spectrum, Karen, the youngest, you know, one of the youngest because there's twins. Karen is now a part-time paranormal investigator and makes like somewhat media appearances.
Interesting.
To talk about this case and is very adamant that what they experienced was real. They didn't gain anything financially from this because her father never quit his job or anything. Yeah. It's not like they lived in luxury. That what they went through was a very real experience and she doesn't want anyone else to go through that, which is why she got into paranormal investigating.
So, yeah. Yeah. I'd like that theory. Like she says, she's the youngest. She was there the whole time, right? Her whole childhood, she was at that place.
Yeah, literally, she was born after they moved into that duplex.
But so I also,
she's like, you know, a young, like 10 years old, 11 years old or whatever when they move, 15 years old, I don't know.
Yeah,
out. Like a young person then when they move.
Yeah, I think they were born the same year I was in 84. So whenever they moved out, you know, they were still little.
Yeah. Yeah. They weren't like super old by then.
Yeah. But that kind of leans to the, with the kids being young, like the whole mass hysteria thing. Like even if he was going through something, delusions or something like that, or, you know, and they just kind of went along with it to keep the peace in the household.
Well, and you know, children
delusions
like that
can spread.
Yeah.
They're very impressionable too. So if the only thing they've ever known is like delusions, I would assume that the way that your brain reacts to that is you just sort of go, that's reality.
You ever teach a kid something the wrong way just on purpose? So funny. They just believe you.
Yeah.
It's great.
They'll just believe you for sure. They don't know. They don't know any difference. They can't check you.
Oh man. It's like, dude, I made it past where you're at. So now I'm going to sit here and make your life harder.
Yeah. It's super fun.
No, I've been watching the TV show Legion, which is an amazing show. And
that's about possession, right?
No. Well, kind of. Yes and no. It's kind of like it's like X-Men's, but it's in an alternative timeline of X-Men's.
Because anytime I hear Legion, I think like we are Legion, like which is that whole thing in the Bible where Jesus exorcised that demon and it went into a flock of pigs.
Yeah.
And then the pigs ran off a cliff. And I always think about that farmer. That farmer must have been like, oh, fuck. My whole livelihood. Jesus.
Jesus.
My entire pig farm. Jesus just like, off the cliff.
Rolls off with his posse. He's just like, day saved.
Took care of the demon. And then he just jumps on a big motorcycle and drives away.
Yeah. License plate says Sono Christ. But, no, yeah, Legion. So, yeah, it's a big part about Legion is delusions and conspiratorial thought and like what is reality and what isn't and stuff. And so an astral projection, a lot of stuff. But no, like you're talking about this delusional thing that can spread. Yeah. I mean, if your parents had like weird delusions and were like very adamant about something and they taught you something as a little kid, you're going to be like, yeah, that's the right way to do because that's what my parents taught me. They taught me, you know, this is how you do things. I'm trying to think of like a good example in real life, but like I can't really kind of pull from.
Well, here's a good one.
Oh, all right.
The way that the children tie their shoes, not being delusional.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But
yeah.
Some kids do the two bunny ears and tie them together, and some of them loop it around and tie them. It's
what were you, Jay? Were you I was a two bunny ears kid.
Loop around.
But then other kids were one loop and wrap around.
Yeah, one loop.
Andy's never learned how to tie shoes, so
I wear slip-on
shoes. I was going to say exclusively slip-on shoes.
I won't wear a pair of shoes that have
what strings. Were you? What were you actually?
So there's a way to tie your shoes where you make two loops.
What the fuck?
What are you talking about with two bunny ears?
Yeah, two loops.
I don't.
So you do an X, right? So you put a lace under a lace and tie, and then you would, I think you just make two loops and tie those together. I don't know. I've changed how I tie my shoes in my adult life.
I tie like Jay, one loop and then you wrap around and then make the other loop.
See, I learned a new way to tie shoes that's far more optimal because I'm trying to optimize
every... This is the most fucking art thing anybody could ever say. I learned a new optimal way to tie my shoes.
I researched the best way to tie your shoes.
Jesus fucking Christ. I wish I had 10% of the time you have on your hands. Holy fuck. I was researching how to tie my shoes. To optimize it. God damn. No. How much time do you spend tying your shoes that this is valuable? Fucking hell.
You know what it actually was? You remember the website StumbleUpon? It was like a thing in the early internet where it would just take you to random web pages.
Oh, yeah.
One of them took me to this page that was like all these crazy. There's so many ways to tie your shoes.
There's so many ways to tie a necktie, too. Mm-hmm.
That, too. And so, like, he showed this way of tying your shoes where it's like you make the X. And you tie them, and then you kind of take both laces, and you, like, flip one this way, and you flip one, like, the opposite way. You kiss the two ends and pull them, and it just makes a perfect knot. And it's, like, instant fuckentaneous. It's, like, super fast.
Does it work? Does it stay?
Yes. It's a knot. It's dope.
Yeah, there's hundreds of different types of knots. I mean, just...
Yeah. Right. Hmm. Look up how to optimize entire shoes, bunkfuckers. It'll save you 0.5 seconds, and over time, that will compound into maybe one extra day of your life.
It doesn't really compound. It just adds up.
Whatever.
You can't compound
I learn everything.
Go learn a fucking Excel sheet, you dork.
That'll save me time.
Sorry, Jay.
I said I learn everything off of TikTok lately. I don't know why. I saw how to...
What's the last thing you learned on TikTok?
I seen how to fry an egg in the microwave today.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know if I'd do that. Is that really worth it?
I don't know. It was just oil on a paper plate and crack an egg on top of it and put it in the microwave for a minute.
There's so many weird TikTok hacks. There's this one I like that I see a lot where it's like this. I don't know who the fuck it is, but it's a cat. It's this person who has this cat who's like really docile, and they dress the cat up in different ways. And so they'll watch little hacks, which are like the stupidest. Like, it's so dumb. Most of them are really fucking dumb. It's like, why would you ever need to do this? And then the cat, he like has the cat like try them. And then if it works, there's all these like funny little sound effects and stuff. It's cute. It's a cat.
Cool.
But anyway,
I don't watch TikTok.
It's a drain on your life for sure.
It really is. I watch YouTube Shorts, which is like the stupid version. It's like 3-month-old TikToks that people upload to YouTube now that they're like trying to get money from both ends. And so I'll see stuff that's like not even relevant anymore. But I like it because it pulls more from like YouTube channels that I'm subscribed to already. So like I'll get like video game stuff and stuff I'm actually interested in instead of like having to use the TikTok algorithm, which like wants me to like, oh, you watch this. What about this fucking thing? I'm like, I'm not interested in that at all.
YouTube Shorts keeps recommending me Norm McDonald jokes.
Yeah, they'll be like Norm McDonald jokes. And I'm like losing the patience for like Norm's really long setups that take forever. And I'm just like, to Jay's point, it rots your brain, like this TikTok stuff. Cause you're just like, no, I need it instantly. Like I got to keep scrolling and like half hour will fly by and you're like, what the fuck?
Yep.
Wow. Damn. The last one of the more recent Norm Macdonald jokes that it recommended to me was this one. The results are in. Last year, United Airlines ranked first in customer satisfaction for all airlines. Do you know what ranked last in customer satisfaction?
I know this one. I'm not going to. I'll say. Okay, I'll play the JetBlue Airlines.
No, 9/11.
I think it's 9/11 Airlines. 9/11. I hate that one. Reminds me of that tragedy. The tag on that is the best part. Yeah. Reminds me of that tragedy. It's just like, Jesus Christ.
By the way, I heard it was just 9/11.
Oh, really?
Which I think makes sense. That would be last in customer satisfaction.
It's true.
Nobody was satisfied that day.
Very
few people, I'll say, were satisfied.
I don't know. So this whole grifter argument, you know, I think back then it was probably a lot harder to grift on certain things. Like, you think about the Warrens, it's kind of like they've committed their whole life to what they do. Whether you, if you believe them or if you think they're grifters, right? Let's just play.
The internet makes grifting easier.
Yeah. It makes it so much easier. You can, I mean, you can,
you could just come up with some stupid idea for a podcast.
Oh, you could do anything.
That you could do for several years, and you could have, like, a Patreon and sell merch and stuff.
Yeah.
And then all these rubes will just buy things and pay you, and you do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy.
No, it's incredibly easy to grift, and there's tons of them across every facet of media. There's news grifters, political grifters, paranormal and alien grifters. We talked about this when we've talked about the all the Dark Fleet stuff, which is fucking, I mean, it's fucking hilarious, but it's like, I paid $20 for a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
You know?
I think what, Dark Fleet and Sleeping Giants were two where it was like very paranormal, but
right.
Like grifting came up big time in the discussion, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to grift, but then to your point, Art, like the Warrens, if they're grifting, like they're really committed to the bit.
Oh, sure.
Because they founded this organization that still exists today that's run by their daughter and son-in-law. Their son-in-law is like the main guy of it now. But they still do, like, they do lectures and they have a museum and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, so it's very committed, but
I think at some point you have to believe your sauce a little bit.
Yeah, you have to be convincing.
You have to be, you have to believe it a smooch.
Yeah.
But then, like, there's also a part of it, you know, where you embellish because you're so committed to what you do that you're like, well, you know, I got to sell the tickets.
Yeah.
Well, and
whatever,
also,
right?
There's always the possibility that people like Ed and Lorraine Warren start out very sincere.
Mm. Sure.
And they have a real objective of helping people.
They got to feed the beast.
And then maybe they accidentally stumble into something like Amityville. And this starts to make them like wealthy and famous and whatever. And it's like, oh, that feels great. And that's cool. Let's look for other good opportunities where
right.
Maybe we can turn this into something.
Right.
But it's like, hey, you see some like person who's like, oh, my kitchen gets disorganized all the time and I don't know why. And they're like, well, that's a fucking stupid story. We're not going to do that.
But then can't make
hear,
a movie out of that.
You're like, oh, I got raped by a ghost. And they're like, bingo. Boom. We're coming.
Spectrophilia, by the way.
Day.
I did say it had a name.
Yes. Spectrophilia.
Spectrophilia. Yeah. We have covered it on this show before, Jay.
Oh, I've listened to so many.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. It's easy to forget because you do not want to remember anything.
I don't even remember stuff that goes on my own show and people question me about it.
I know that feeling.
Get ready for that to happen for the rest of your career.
Our beloved bunk funkers in the Discord are always bringing up stuff about the show. And I'm like, oh, shit, I got to go listen to it. I don't know what they're talking about.
I don't remember.
I mean, spoiler alert for all of you in the Discord. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Getting back to the Ed and Lorraine thing. I have a feeling that Lorraine, okay, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt with the medium thing or the psychic aspect of her career and stuff like that, that she might have been a little more open to experiences where I think Ed was the business end of it. Ed was out there make the money. Like you said, even maybe it was after Amityville or whatever, where he was like, wow, we could do this and we can sell books and we can do this. So he was like, he was in the marketing side where she was actually the one that had the ability to see into another plane, I guess.
They're not mutually exclusive, right? The ideas of being a I guess when we say grift, we kind of assume that it's a snake oil salesman who's like, I don't believe this stuff, but I know I can sell it. But it's like, I guess you're right. Like in some aspects, Jay, it's like you can, you can like kind of believe it, but then also be like, listen, I want to make like money doing it. Like, well, why wouldn't you want to do what you love? If this is what they love.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's one of those things where it's like, maybe it's a grift. Sure. But even if it is a grift, is it really all that harmful? You know, because people enjoy it for the entertainment value. If the Smurl family's not in like real distress from what's happening, but
that's where it kind of divides it, right? Where if they are, exactly. Then you're an asshole for not helping them.
For sure. Like if you just, because like Jay, we talked about this on the show when we covered Annalise Michelle.
Yeah.
Right.
Which was an exorcism where it really felt to me like her parents were super negligent because they were so set on this being like a demonic possession rather than it being something where they could have just gotten their daughter mental health care and that probably would have made her life better. Instead, she ended up dying. So it's like, that's really like a hard line for me that you definitely shouldn't cross. Like if the Smurls are in on the grift, great. Everybody
wins. Yep.
Everybody. Congratulations. If they're being terrorized by something in their house or like having shared delusions and mass hysteria, it's like, that's probably not the greatest thing to like encourage that and then be like, yeah, you could make a little bit of scratch off of this.
Yeah, but I'm going to put my name on it. On the book.
Right. I'm going to make more scratch than you because I'm more savvy. Because
I have all the connections.
I have no idea. I have no idea what the split out was and how much money Jack and Janet made off of any of the resultant media that came out of their haunting story.
I don't think it's enough to retire. And that's why I think you have people be like, then
why would you want to retire from the Topps bubblegum company? You get to see all that. You get to chew all that delicious gum, all that super hard gum that's hard to chew.
What is Topps Bubble? Is that like, do they make those like that old school like yellow wrapper with the blue fringe?
That's
that pink bubble gum. That's that.
But it's also the card company, you know, Topps baseball cards and trading cards, whatever collectible cards.
That gum is awful.
So that gum that comes in there, that like strip of gum that comes in the card pack. That's
I don't
Topps.
Remember that.
You don't remember opening a... you're probably too young.
I never did baseball cards.
Jay, you remember this, where you open a pack of baseball cards and there's like a piece of gum in there?
Yeah, I remember. That and the Bazooka Joe gum that was kind of the same with the comic on it.
I remember Bazooka Joe was
so much better than the Double Bubble.
Were they Hubba Bubba
Bazooka
too?
Joe Cherry. Now, there's a good gum.
I like the little comics that you would get with Bazooka Joe too.
Yeah.
Were they Hubba Bubba too?
I don't know.
Hey, Hubba Bubba is a good gum. That's a tasty gum.
Anyways.
Why would you retire from that job?
Jay, I don't know if there's any other points you want to bring up or any pieces that we haven't talked about, talking points that we haven't hit, but otherwise we can get on over to our verdicts.
Yeah, just one more point before the back and forth before we go out is like the stains and the stuff in the house and the repairing of the house. Like water damage obviously is something that can't be painted over and it'll continue to like soak through drywall or plaster or something like that.
100%.
And then you had like there was a grease stain on their freshly new put in floors and like they would scrub this grease stain and it would continue to come back. And I mean, it's just some of the little factors in the story kind of, that's why it always splits me either way sometimes.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And it's true. This house, too, I don't know if this makes a difference for anybody, but this house, too, is very old. This house was originally built in, what did I read? Like 1896?
Good Lord.
So this is like, now it's over a century old. It was almost 100 years old when they were living there.
My house is actually 100 years old. It was built in 1920.
Wow.
Yeah, the house I grew up in was built in the 1800s. Wow. I built it.
You were there.
I was there.
No, it's true. Old houses are really hard to upkeep, especially if you're not handy or you're kind of newer homeowners. This is your first, you know, go around. You haven't really learned the tricks of the trade yet. Seems like, you know, the Smurls were busy. You know, they got a lot of kids. They got stuff to do. And then they're having these demon problems. So, but, you know, that's what I'm saying is like, you know, yeah, if you've got like a water leak.
Yeah.
You know, if you're paint starts peeling on your ceiling, you know, and you're kind of like, well, what the fuck is causing this? It's like, well, it could be water damage, but it also could be that someone didn't paint it the right way, or they used crappy, shitty paint, or that's the thing with houses is like, there's usually one good way to fix it that people have learned because people have been living in houses for a long ass time.
Yeah.
But it's like the diagnosis for what to do sometimes can be like multiple different paths. Like if you have a leaky faucet, it's like you can clean out the aerator, or could be a problem with your pipes, or it could be a problem with the hardware that you picked to put on the water pressure, or it's like there's a million fucking things.
Well, they even knew about
you figure out what it is.
they knew about the pipe outside, then the sewage pipe, right? That came forward like later on that even everybody in the neighborhood was complaining about the same septic smell in the neighborhood. So that kind of proved that out.
Yeah, if you've ever been in a building with a like sewage smell in it, like from an actual like sewer pipe, it's horrible.
Yeah.
We did it here one time at my house. We cleaned out one of the tubs and used some new thing. Like we didn't use, like everything I've ever used to clean out a tub has always been that like Drano shit, which can be hit or miss, but it like basically is a chemical that just burns things inside your pipe until it clears it. This thing was like a weird... It was like silly putty. It was weird. It was like you put it down into the drain and then you pull it back up and it like
kind of like blows up when you put it in there.
I know what you were talking about, but I don't think that's what he was talking about.
Yeah, no. It's like a silly, it's almost like a, it's not like a spider or like an auger that a plumber would use. It's like, but it's like that. It's like silly putty though. Oh. It grabs the gunk and it pulls it out, but then like it unblocked this massive sewage just like, because I think, you know, like how pipes work is there's like a water trap that stops the sewer smell from coming back up. It might have cleared that out as well. And just the whole house smelled like just like straight up sewage. And it was awful.
Yeah. It's easy to see.
And that's one little pipe, right? Yeah. Imagine a whole fucking...
Well, I imagine the huge pipe that's carrying the sewage under the street being cracked and leaking the aroma.
And that shit can fuck with your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
It'd be easy to get sick smelling that.
That's why you're so fucked up.
Yeah, I live stink. In that. Yeah, I fucking smell like a sewer. I'm a fucking pig.
You spend all day on that open-faced toilet.
I spend all day on the open-faced toilet. I've got my ghostly piggish figure wandering around, shambling about people's places.
Shamble.
Well, it's a great point, Jay. Any other points you want to
raise? No, I'm good. If you guys want to roll into verdicts.
Oh, baby. We'll get to the verdicts now. Jay has been prepped officially with a copy of the patented Bunker's
Tale. Now I'm going to share it with everybody I know.
Verdict. Oh, no. Oh, God.
It's copyright protected by the highest of highest sciences and different patents.
Yeah, so warning to any of Jay's friends, if you try and use that scale, we'll find you, and our attorneys will cease and desist your asses. Art, you want to go ahead and give your verdict?
Sure. You know, when I look at this, you know, I'm not super duper convinced by it. I do think that there's a lot of pretty plausible things. You know, I've always teetered on the edge. I've always dabbled in the belief in that whole weird sort of paranormal side of things. That isn't ghosts, but like is demons. If you tell me it's a demon or an angel, I'm like, okay, you have my interest.
Yeah, you're very into the religious aspect of it.
I don't know. There's just something about it. I don't know if it is my upbringing or if it's just, I just really like that stuff because it's neat. Like I like Constantine and I like demons and stuff. I think they're neato. I have a t-shirt with Orcus on it. And then people think it's like a metal band t-shirt. And I'm like, no, it's actually one of the demon lords of undeath. He's a big fat pig man. He's got goat feet. He's also got a badass wand. He can like summon skeletons and shit. Cool. Anyway, he's got wings.
Yeah, big Paul McCartney fan.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I just think it's neat. I just think stuff like that's neat. It's neato. It's scary. It's spooky, but it's kind of neat. And, I don't know why. I don't know why it tickles my fancy, but you know, I just think that there's different things here that kind of, I'm going to go plausible minus and a half. Okay.
I think. You know, I haven't watched a TV movie. You know, I haven't done as much research as you have. I'm just kind of listening to your word of mouth. So it's kind of that's where I'm landing.
Yeah. You're getting my full bias on it.
Right.
Okay. Plausible minus and a half.
Yeah.
For art on what? Just in general that this is demonic possession?
Right.
Okay. All right. Got it. So, Jay, would you like to be in the hot seat? Or would you rather wait and I'll go first?
I can go. That's fine.
Okay. All right. You're on the
Okay. So I had, I have issues with the story, but the issues are based around Ed and Lorraine Warren. So if it wasn't for the involvement of them into the story, I'd have said case confirmed. That it was, you know, they had a demonic possession. The church was involved, you know, that they were just, you know, possessed by a demon and that these other entities were in the house with them and causing all these problems. And it's a telltale demon possession story, you know, with the preteen daughter and everything that goes into one of those possession stories or not possession, but demon stories. So with the involvement of them and the book and the made for TV movie, I fall more plausible +. Just their basic story. If it was told to you without interjection of all the stuff that I said was the problem with the story would sound a lot more realistic to you.
And convincing,
yeah. Yes. So if you had, you know, like, oh my goodness, for these years and all this stuff was going on and we couldn't move because we were already financially strained from losing our house to begin with. And we were living in a duplex with, you know, her parents on the opposite side. And they had all these issues and maybe some of them were, what was that?
Those are the real demons.
Jack's parents
living with the in-laws, am I right, Phyllis?
But if you throw everything that's a normal everyday demon possession,
right? No, you're right.
I think the demon
is controlling other entities. I think that's so dope. Like that, this demon is playing puppet master with other spirits and stuff. I'm like, oh man, I want to learn more about this demon. Like, what's going on here? Are these its powers?
I just always think of
crazy.
What is the movie with Matt Damon where he's like, I'm a fucking demon. Dogma. Yeah, that's the movie.
Oh, yeah, Dogma. I haven't watched that for a long time.
Kevin Smith.
Yeah. Good movie. All right, so we got Art at plausible minus and a half, and we got Jay at plausible +. Buckle up, beefers. I'm about to deliver a classic Andy verdict here.
Here we go.
I'm going case closed on this one.
Wow.
You know me. I say fuck ghosts, fuck demons. That shit's fake as hell. I think probably what's going on here. Here's what makes the most sense to me. You know, you've got Jack Smurl, and he's had this issue with meningitis in his 20s, and he's just recently had surgery. He's dealing with some health problems, potential for some kind of delusions. That he's experiencing. He's also got the stress of their home gets fucking flooded by a hurricane. They have to move to basically the place that they could afford, which was this duplex in West Pittston. They have to move in with his parents. They've got the stress of then Mary having a heart attack. There's a lot of stress on this family.
There is.
They're involved in a lot of stuff in their community. They have 4 kids. That's a very stressful environment to me. Just hearing about it is giving me anxiety.
Yeah.
I can really understand how somebody who has maybe a predisposition to some type of delusion could get so stressed out. This whole family could be so stressed out that they all start experiencing this shared sense of delusion. They eventually get to a point where they have other people coming in and almost validating this for them. You know,
right.
It's like the Scranton Diocese doesn't really validate them. And so they keep looking and they're looking and they're looking for help and they find the Warrens and the Warrens are validating to them. And yes, this is what you're experiencing. Yes, absolutely. There's a demon here controlling 3 other ghosts that are haunting you and this is what's terrorizing you. I can understand how that would lead to like a ramp up in the delusion because suddenly they're not being told, no, you're wrong. That's not what's happening. They're being told, yes, you're right. That's exactly what's happening. So to me, it seems like that's probably what's going on. Although I'll admit, I could be open to criticism on this, because why didn't that stuff continue at their new house then? Why did an exorcism work on the new house if this is all some shared delusion?
Right.
But at the same time, I don't know enough about all their health histories and stuff. By this point, the girls are getting older. They're probably starting to move out. Maybe things are becoming a little less chaotic. Maybe Jack's mother dies and he doesn't have to worry about her anymore. Maybe Jack's dad dies. He doesn't have to worry about them anymore. They're dead.
The real demons.
They're real demons. They're dead. I don't know. When all that stuff happens in relation to everything else, Jack, by the way, is now dead. Died from diabetes.
Aww.
75 years old. Not very old.
Interesting.
But that's my verdict on this. So
fair enough. That's a classic Andy verdict.
That's a classic Jeez. Andy verdict. These Damn. Are a collection of verdicts that I think will stand the test of time, at least for 14 years until we move
in a
to
nice
a
wide
house.
Range.
Yeah, we got two in the green and one in the red.
Right.
So of course, as usual, I'm the one who's taking a big fat dump on the topic.
Gee, thanks.
And everybody else is doing a great job being a good sport. But that's it. That's the episode. We would be remiss if we didn't take a moment right here, right now, to say thank you to Jay from Project Skeptic Podcast.
Thank you, Jay.
Jay, we love to do this with our guests for our listeners.
Put on the blindfold.
Put on the blindfold. Do you think this is a banana or something else? So we love to do this with our guests. For all of our beefers out there that are listening right now, what do you want to plug? Where can they find your stuff? This is your moment. Say anything you want.
Anything?
Yeah,
anything.
Oh, no. So, yeah, you guys can find me, Project Skeptic, over Apple, Spotify, anywhere really that you can download a podcast. We're on it right now. Facebook. We have a Facebook group. I know that's like the old man like thing. Like, oh, they got a Facebook group. But no, we got a Facebook group where we share all our stuff in there. Project Skeptic on Facebook. Instagram's Project Skeptic Podcast. And we also have... We have a website, projectskeptic.com, that has all the links to everything. You can actually listen to the show on the website, which is really cool. And yeah, everything there. We live stream on Twitch on Friday nights if you want to watch the show.
So nice.
We live stream on Twitch. It's Project Skeptic on Twitch. You can watch us there Friday night, comment. We usually answer some of the stuff and on the live stream too. So yeah, that's where you can find us and give me shit about stuff, which... happens a good bit. So, but you can email me at projectskepticpod@gmail.com.
Very cool. Any big upcoming things you want to plug?
Fun episodes or different.
Yeah,
events?
we just did a bring your own topic episode this week.
Wow.
BYOD. And, I did, Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh,
and the other guy, my co-host, Rob.
Fun. Why did I say that was fun? It's not fun.
Yeah, I wonder why you said it was fun. Jeez, you and Mr. Bunker much?
I guess I do have it.
my co-host brought. There was a guy that lived in England. He skated death. Like he fell out of a plane. He got hit by a car. He got hit by a bus. Just all these things through his lifetime. He just skirted death like his whole entire life, and then he won the lottery when he was like 73 years old.
Whoa.
Oh, damn, that's a great story.
It's a great
we covered that this week's episode actually is going to be that. So if you guys are interested in that, come check us out this week.
Wow. Awesome. Very cool. So beefers, go check out Jay, Project Skeptic Podcast. And let us know what you thought of the Smurl family haunting. We'll make sure Jay gets it. But you can tweet at us, DM us, Instagram at Mr. Bunker Pod. Use the hashtag ghostly pig.
Okay.
Hashtag ghostly pig. Let us know what you think about the Smurl haunting. Let me know how much you hate my verdict and how much you love Jay and Art's verdicts. Also, you can email us, MrBunkerPod@gmail.com, if you feel so inclined and have the means to do so. Don't forget that you can always visit patreon.com/MrBunkerPod, where you get access to, for only $5 a month, you can get access to hundreds of thousands of hours of behind-the-scenes exclusive content, just me and Art in our bathrooms at home.
That's where I am.
Doing whatever we do. Yeah, that's where Jay is, in our bathrooms at our homes, taking a bath, as he does. We've got all kinds of stuff, and you get access to the Discord, which is a lot of fun.
We started live streams, too. I'm doing a playthrough of Cult of the Lamb for patrons only. It's been fun. You can come in and watch it and get a little cult follower named after you, or just watch me be bad at the game.
Yeah, it's great fun for everybody. So if you're interested, think about it. Patreon.com/MrBunkerPod.
Andy's cultist made Nick's cultist try to eat. Did you see this clip?
Yeah.
You wanted to prank Nick by making him eat a bowl of poop.
Right.
And then when I cooked a bowl of poop, you ran up and ate the poop.
Classic.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And then I talked to you and I completed the quest and you were like, man, that was so funny. We totally got him. It's like
real life.
It was literally perfect.
It's the real life.
It was the best moment. We'll never top that moment ever again.
Yeah. I do stuff like that.
Unbelievable.
So if you want to watch me eat poop, patreon.com/MrBunkerPod, come join the live streams. But that's it. That's our show. A big thank you again to Jay from Project Skeptic. Yeah,
thank you, guys.
Jay.
This was awesome. It was so good to have you on the show. Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us, Beefers. So for not the titular Mr. Bunker, but for my glandular co-host, Art, I'm Andy saying that was the whole enchilada.
The Conjuring. Conjuring up some Scooby snacks.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.